B-Pod Studios.
This is WWE Superstar Roman Reigns, and you are listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley, two great members of the Kowloon crew. Mike, remember, this is Jay Stu's yard, brother.
Mike Riley, let's lead off with some late-breaking rumor and innuendo. And this is late-breaking according to my phone, my infamous iPhone.
Yep.
The rumor, I specify this is a rumor. The Undertaker is penciled in to return at Survivor Series this year. Before we get into that, who I believe he'll be fighting, how do you feel about the potential of an Undertaker return at Survivor Series?
Oh, it's a beautiful thing because that is officially the 30-year anniversary of the debut of The Undertaker, Survivor Series 1990, of course, Hartford, Connecticut. Now, Survivor Series, it was originally supposed to be in Dallas, if my memory stands correct. And that, of course, is pretty much close to home base for The Undertaker. I don't think that's going to happen Dallas this year. I'd be shocked if it did, but if he's going to be in there for Survivor Series, I think that's awesome. The fact that we saw him at WrestleMania in the video match with AJ Styles, the graveyard one pre-produced, you could very easily do something there for this scenario without the crowd, of course, because they have that to their advantage. The strong points of the Boneyard match work so well. Why not do it again? So build upon the fact that, yes, it is a 30-year anniversary of The Undertaker's debut. And it's funny you said that, James, because I saw two things this week, too, just to sidetrack real quick. The Taker, they're having 25 days of The Taker starting
30 days of Taker.
30 days.
Starting October 25th.
So it makes perfect sense leading up to it. And then also, I saw that there is a very strong possibility that Undertaker and John Cena would be at WrestleMania pending there is a crowd. So to bring the dead man back into the conversation for Survivor Series, give me more of The Undertaker.
So haven't heard or seen about the John Cena thing. But as it relates to The Undertaker, I'm perfectly fine with him doing Survivor Series. I'm perfectly fine with him being an attraction at this point.
Yep.
That's what he's been for the last however many years.
Yep.
And he's healthy enough and this, that, and the other thing. I'm going to be very specific in what I'd like to see and what may be in pencil on the books here. And they're kind of one and the same. If my rumor and innuendo gossiping is accurate, which
yep.
I hope it is, and I think it is.
Yeah.
I want to see Roman Reigns destroy The Undertaker at Survivor Series.
Really?
I want him to beat The Undertaker. You can figure out the details of the backstory about how you get there. But the idea is this would be a rematch from WrestleMania 33 in Orlando, a match that Roman Reigns does not get enough credit for carrying. A promo the night after that Roman Reigns doesn't get enough credit for mastering. And all he did was he walked to the center of the ring, stood there, the crowd booed him, and he said, "This is my yard," dropped the mic and left.
Right, right.
But to that WrestleMania 33 match in Orlando, Undertaker had nothing left in the tank.
Yeah.
And Roman got 20-plus minutes out of that beat-up Undertaker. Mm-hmm. So this match, if it is going to happen at Survivor Series, and again, this is pencil, this is speculation, this is, I'm throwing every disclaimer out there in case I'm wrong. I don't think I am.
Mm-hmm.
This match shouldn't go more than 10 minutes, but the point of the match is The Undertaker is healthy and can give Roman more, but Roman is so dominant, and Roman Reigns right now is making a transition into becoming Brock Lesnar. And in becoming that character, he puts such a beating on The Undertaker. The Undertaker just gets completely destroyed, and it puts more, quote, heat and more dislike on Roman Reigns. So the thought of Roman beating Taker within an inch of his wrestling career, Mike. It turns me on. It kind of does it for me. Get rid of the Undertaker.
You hate the Undertaker. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, he's done. Well, but as far as him being an attraction, like, I'm fine with it.
So, Jimmy,
I'm for it, and I just want to see Roman Reigns just destroy this guy and claim it his yard, and that's the end of the Undertaker. And in putting over Roman Reigns, which was what was originally planned for WrestleMania 33,
right.
That was supposed to be the under. They brought Jim Ross back. They give Jim Ross a brand new contract to do 2 years to do the last Undertaker match, and the Undertaker then came back.
Jimmy, you're going to need Roman one of these Reigns. After. You're going to need that after.
Oh, the signed urn.
Yeah, but look at the back. Thank you, Taker.
Yeah, I did that once. I did that once. I'm not doing that again. Get rid of this guy.
Well, all right, listen. I understand your whole concept.
They,
there with
they
the
turned
Roman
the
Reigns.
Lights out in Orlando at 12:14 a.m., okay?
And time that was to way go too home. Yeah, well, first of all, trim the fat with all the other three quarters of the matches that were still good, but you could cut down so much other stuff. How about Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton, that match, okay? That was
Randy Orton became the new WWE champion. How do you cut out a WWE championship match from WrestleMania?
Yeah, how do you remember that match? It was a terrible match. It was awful.
An attempt at a mini-movie.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was not good. And
but how do you eliminate a WWE championship match?
I'm not saying you're going to eliminate the match. I'm saying you can cut down the fat by the timing of the match there. Give these two guys more time that they deserve.
And so you think Undertaker and Roman Reigns deserve more time?
No, I'm just saying that the fact that it ended at 12:15 at night, it didn't have to end at 12:15 at night if you had other matches cut down in shorter period of time there, where we could have been out of there, say, 11:30 or even 11.
Let's see.
That was a long ass
night.
So
the WWE Championship match was 10 minutes and 30 seconds.
I could have made that 4 minutes and 30 seconds, but okay, keep going.
Okay, the Brock Lesnar Goldberg match was 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 45 seconds. Brock Lesnar versus Goldberg might have been the best match on that show.
But again, you can make it as short as possible. It happened at the Survivor Series. So bottom line here is that your point of having the lights go out at 12:15 a night, you can trim the fat on a lot of the other matches. I'll have to pull this up right now. How about the, let's see here. I mean, the big pop was the Hardy Boys. It was great. You asked Vince McMahon, he didn't like the Kevin Owens match. I can't believe we're doing this right now. WrestleMania 33 going over this. Dean Ambrose, Baron Corbin. Come on. Do you remember that match?
Yeah, it was on the pre-show.
Yeah, but again, do you need all that stuff there?
It was on the pre-show, and the reason why it got switched to the pre-show was they realized they couldn't do Naomi's entrance when it was daylight, because guess what? She
you need to have a neon light.
And the neon lights and everything.
Yes,
and that
was
only
five minutes. 5:35. Yeah, 5:35. But the Seth Rollins Triple H one. Okay.
What I didn't need was 23 minutes of The Undertaker limping around. That's what I didn't need. Didn't need to see Roman Reigns showing how great he is by carrying a cripple around the ring for 23 minutes.
If you're going to get Roman and The Undertaker, I don't care how long it's going to take. If Undertaker is healthy,
10 minutes or less.
No, I'm fine with giving him all the time in the world. I have no issue with that.
Put this guy out of his misery. Go away.
No. He's an attraction, like you said. You're going against your point there. That's a good thing for viewership. For the Undertaker, more Undertaker is a better thing for the company.
No, I'm fine with him being an attraction, but the concept of the match is what I want, and that's Roman to destroy this guy.
I mean,
and put his career in jeopardy.
No, I understand what you're saying. Yes, I like that whole thing there to build up Roman and get the heat there. I think that's good for him down the line to keep him at that, you know, the top dog and so forth, and the best maybe universal champion of all time when it's all said and done, where it very easily could be that way. And the fact that he said, yeah, I beat The Undertaker twice, I buried him and all that, that's perfect for you have your shot ready. You ready, Jimmy, for storytelling? There you go. The only time you're getting it for the night. But other than that, though, yeah, I'd prefer to see Undertaker win as a fan, but that's probably not going to happen if it is going to be against Roman Reigns.
Yeah, Roman's going to destroy him, and his career is going to be in jeopardy, and Undertaker is going to get to do what he wanted to do at WrestleMania 33. This is how we got there, is Undertaker's last match was to make Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
So now, whereas everybody's like, oh, well, he wins, he has the match with AJ Styles. Now Undertaker can get to do what he wanted to do 3 years ago. and that make Roman look strong, because that is really the goal of all of us, Mike Riley, is to make Roman look strong.
Yeah, well, I think that's what the boss wants, and what he wants, he gets.
So,
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The other legend that might be on the list of opponents for Roman Reigns is something that Paul Heyman mentioned in passing in an interview, and something that our friends, the New Age Insiders, tweeted about.
Great people.
That is Bill Goldberg. Bill Goldberg. Goldberg, who was supposed to main event this year's WrestleMania, defending the Universal Championship against Roman Reigns. Bill Goldberg has said himself that he has 2 years left on his contract, and he has two matches per year, so that's four matches in total left on his contract. In my opinion, those four matches: Roman Reigns, Edge, John Cena, Drew McIntyre. So if the Undertaker information isn't accurate, and he's not penciled in for Survivor Series, and the opponent for Roman Reigns at Survivor Series is Bill Goldberg, how does that make you feel, Mike Riley?
So, okay, as an Undertaker honk, I actually do feel better about that, because I'd much prefer to see Goldberg get his ass kicked against Roman Reigns and The Undertaker. Is there still the possibility to get The Undertaker back at Survivor Series? Sure. But if he's going to get his ass kicked against Roman Reigns, where you have the opportunity to have Goldberg get his ass kicked against Roman, give me Goldberg over The Undertaker on that one. Now, does Goldberg really do much for me in that situation? Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not a big Goldberg honk. I never really have been. I wasn't thrilled to hear that initially. There was talk about him returning and so forth at some point. I know you brought it up to me here a couple of weeks ago. I wasn't really impressed with it. But if it's going to be for the fact of Roman beating up another legend, beating the crap out of him, I could totally see that match being like a real quick 2-3 minute one with the spear and get him right back. Don't you think so?
5 minute match.
Yeah, five or less. Yeah. Take the under.
And that's fine, because it's about the entrance and everything.
Right.
If you're telling me that Roman Reigns and Bill Goldberg are having a match, I'm in. I love it. I love the idea of the match. I love the idea of the star power in the match. And I love the idea of the spear versus the spear.
That's big, to me,
that's good stuff. And my assumption is Roman goes over. But I think Bill Goldberg makes it tough on Roman. And I think we get a knockdown drag out that I think would be similar to the Brock Lesnar Goldberg match at WrestleMania 33 in Orlando. And to me, that's still the match of that night. And probably that should have been Goldberg's last match, but it wasn't, because he could get more paydays, and that's perfectly cool. I've become more of a Bill Goldberg fan probably this last run. I liked his work in WCW, but I wasn't like a honk for him.
Right
now I'm kind of like, yep, I know Goldberg is limited, but I think he's got a lot of spunk, and I think he does right. And the other thing that doesn't get talked about, especially by us, is the young kids love Bill Goldberg, and that's where he's got a lot of value as an attraction.
Yeah, it's the name. He's, you know, Hall of Famer now. He's got all that working on his favor. And with Roman Reigns in that picture right there with Goldberg, he's a heavy favorite to win. And I think it's pretty safe to say that Roman Reigns is not going to lose a match until at least WrestleMania at the earliest. I think he's going to be straight clean here up until, well, I shouldn't say clean, but victorious up until early April.
I do tend to believe, though, that you're going to get Undertaker versus Roman and Goldberg versus Roman at Survivor Series and Rumble, and maybe that order is flipped in some way, but I think that that's what's coming on the march to Roman versus The Rock at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Or don't sleep on Roman versus John Cena next year either.
Yeah, yep. That's a very strong possibility.
But I think that they're going to line up all these legends for Roman to knock down. Yep. And then they'll figure out what the ultimate payoff is. And that's right. Just an opinion right there.
Yeah. No, that's a fair assumption there. I like that. But hopefully, I'd rather see Goldberg get the beating over the Taker.
I think they'll both take a nice ass whooping.
Come on,
Mike,
Undertaker.
I know you had a specific thought relating to SmackDown this past Friday night.
Yeah. Let's see here. Well, are we talking? You want to go Lars Sullivan first? You want to start with that? Let's go right to it. Here we go, Lars Sullivan. So, you know, Jimmy, last week you made a comment about right here on the show about Lars Sullivan that, you know, we're giving him too much time about his, you know, career and so forth. And I kind of laughed it off. I didn't really know too much about it. So reading more into it this week, you know, and watching SmackDown with Lars Sullivan, you know, making that the debut there on it and taking out Jeff Hardy and Matt Riddle. And for crying out loud, Jimmy, did you know that Lars Sullivan is a freak? You know, he's a freak, you know? Mm-hmm. If not,
28 times Michael Cole used that term.
I was about to say, if not, here's his email, michaelcole@wwe.com. Send him a note. He'll give you all the information. But, you know, reading up on Lars Sullivan here, a very checkered past. And I don't think he realizes, well, hopefully he does realize how lucky he is to be in this situation. You're getting a push on SmackDown with Jeff Hardy right there and Matt Riddle and the best WWE program show after essentially he was suspended for a good year and a half or so. But this was all based on posts, and this is what I read up on the post. I'm not going to read you word for word, but they referenced stereotypes pertaining to black men and white women, you know, bad words against black men and talking about just some really bad things you shouldn't say in the year 2020, especially. Now, WWE did fine Lars Sullivan $100,000 and required him to complete a sensitivity training for offensive commentary uncovered from his past. These comments, by the way, were on wrestling boards on the internet there. Okay. But Jimmy, let's be honest here. As I mentioned to you in a text message today, if this happened to a worker that pours your coffee at Dunkin' Donuts or someone that changes your tire at your local mechanic shop or something in a chain place making a comment like that, they'd be fired. They would be fired. And listen, as a part-time guy myself at 98.5 The Sports Hub, if I made a comment like that publicly, I'd be out of there. It's a one-slap policy on this. He is so damn lucky to have this position here. He better not screw it up, because you're obviously getting the push from the bigwigs there to be in this position. Don't ever, ever, it's a lesson for anyone to do anything like this in life. And when you have that opportunity, just really, you know, embrace everything you have and hopefully learn from your past. You also saw the Instagram post he had with that message to that that girl there looking for the nude pictures. You saw that, right? The
Instagram. He sent Venmo money.
Like, what
I
the
sent
hell,
you that
man?
On Monday.
Yeah.
And that happened this past a week ago.
But doesn't he learn? I mean, what a creep, man. I mean, God, you don't do that. You're a public figure too. Come on. I don't know. I really, when do you learn? You had your little thing, your sensitivity training. And what does WWE have to do? Do they have to, I don't know, what's their policy?
It's case-by-case basis. Is that your rant on Lars Sullivan?
I don't like the situation. I think he needs to realize how lucky he is. And the fact that I'm a little disappointed with WWE, to be honest with you, because if they sent him to the sensitivity here, obviously they know about the Instagram post. Why have they not fined him or suspended him yet? Why?
Don't know.
I'm a little disappointed with them. There you go.
This will be the last time, unless he wins the world championship, that you will ever hear that name on this podcast.
Oh, thank you, Jimmy. Good. I had to get that off my chest. Very disgusted.
As far as Hell in a Cell goes,
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
That's this coming Sunday night, October 25th. We've discussed the Sasha Banks Bayley story at length. I know you have some thoughts on it, so I'll set you up for that in a minute.
Sure.
I think we agree that Roman Reigns makes Jey Uso quit in their Hell in a Cell match, and that's kind of the most interesting part, is how do they get to the finish, and if Roman Reigns is satisfied with Jey Uso quitting. And if he's not looking for more, like being called the tribal chief or denouncing other family members, like how far is Roman Reigns going to go? I think that's the interesting part of how Roman Reigns wins the I Quit match. So the third match, and there's only three matches announced as we're recording this on Sunday night, is Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton for the WWE Championship. That is a Hell in a Cell match as well. So this could be an all-timer. Mm-hmm. It could be a match of the year candidate. It could be all of this stuff. But I think what I need to see here is a decisive Drew McIntyre win. But they can't have a decisive win in the same way that Roman will decisively beat Jey Uso. I think we agree that Sasha Banks and Bayley are going to have what's going to be a match that's going to be remembered by all of us. Like, right? Like, so
should be the main event.
Great Hell in a Cells, we remember, especially it's, you know, last year's, we remember Sasha versus Becky Lynch was tremendous.
Yep.
We remember Mankind versus Undertaker, Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels. There are others that we remember, the Usos against New Day, yep, and so on. So I think that the Bayley Sasha one has the potential to be that.
Yep.
Is a very memorable match. So what's left for McIntyre and Orton? I'm not sure, because it could go a lot of different ways, but part of me feels like this is going to be a match that just kind of gets lost in the shuffle. So three cell matches in one night is a lot. Look at the pay-per-view, the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view we went to in Boston. They had three cell matches. Charlotte beat Sasha in the main event. Dave Meltzer gave that 3 stars. Seth Rollins took on Kevin Owens for the Universal Championship with a lot of interference from Chris Jericho. And Kevin Owens retained. That was a 4-star match, according to Dave Meltzer. And then there was the forgotten opener of that pay-per-view, which was Hell in a Cell, where Roman Reigns retains the United States Championship over Rusev, which was a 3.25-star match. I remember that match as Rusev puts the camel clutch with the chain around Roman on the stairs. Roman powers out, Samoan drop, and then spears him off the stairs, and that's your win. I remember that being a great match, but it's lost in the depth chart of that show. So my fear is that the WWE Championship match is going to be lost in the depth chart of that show, because I'm still waiting for McIntyre and Orton to have that classic match. I keep getting told that Randy Orton is this great worker, and yet I'm continuously disappointed by his work.
Really? So, okay. Now, I understand where you're saying that it could get lost in the shuffle. I'm not 100% disappointed by his work. I think he's one of the best performers over the last 20 years. There's a reason why he's been in this position for 20 years. Still, now here he is in that main event picture. You know, I actually picked him to beat Drew McIntyre at
SummerSlam. We all did. Exactly. We all thought Orton was getting his title because they were giving the big push.
13-time.
You know, and let me be clear, Orton has done some of his best work this year.
Yes.
But there's still this inconsistency thing in the back of my head. Yep. And this, you know, like last year working with Kofi, I was disappointed.
Yep.
He works with Edge and he has a great run with Edge.
Right.
And the build to get him to McIntyre was excellent. And now he's here with McIntyre, and maybe my expectations are too high. Maybe it goes to this whole thing about I'm still not a Randy Orton guy.
Yeah.
Even though, like, I have these moments of perspective and his 14 title runs, and like he can do good work when he's motivated. He can do great work when he's motivated. But he's just not my guy.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. Now, this could be, I think it could go either one of two ways here. Obviously, if Drew McIntyre wins, I think that's it. No more. No more Drew, Randy Orton. That's done. And I'll stick to my prediction.
AJ Styles would be his next opponent.
Exactly. Yes, now that he's on Raw. However, though, if they throw the real wrench in the fire here of Randy Orton winning this match, which, again, I don't think that's going to happen, but if it is, then you could have, you know, Drew try to get that one more revenge shot at him.
Otis cashes in.
Exactly.
That's the play.
But
Otis cashes in.
But although it seems like Otis might be going for the Intercontinental title, though. I don't know. I don't think
they know what they're doing with Otis, but I just, in the back of my mind, they got to do something with that case.
Yeah, and if he does cash in, that was my other thought too, because now you have that funky pay-per-view, the Tables, Ladders, and Chairs in December, so you can just work that in there somehow with that, and then, I don't know, someone loses right there. But, you know, I just think this is the end of that particular rival for a while, Drew and Randy Orton. And yeah, it probably will get lost in the shuffle, but I know you brought up the point of three Hell in a Cell matches in one night of it being a lot. No. See, I disagree. I think it's a good thing in the Thunderdome. I think that's perfect because here you are in the pay-per-view, the COVID era here right now, where you don't have that full fan reaction, but you do have that spectacle right there with the Hell in a Cell. That definitely helps. I thought the Money in the Bank pay-per-view was fun. I thought it was a good one to watch. And even the Boneyard match, something. I'm not saying the Hell in a Cell will be pre-produced, but when you do have that spectacle and that prop value there, that is good for television.
Three is too many.
No, like, I love it.
I thought they did two last year, and they had the non-finish on Rollins and Wyatt.
That was a joke. That was a disgrace.
But I thought two was fine because it's your Universal Championship and it's your women's. It's one of your women's championships, yeah, so that's fine. But now you've got your two most important singles men's titles, and you've got one of your women's titles.
Yeah.
But last year, that to me is too much.
Well, with the Fiend last year, that was kind of like his gimmick. The Hell in the Cell and all that, the character thing.
I hope it's not red. I hope they go back to the silver one or the black one. Or
yeah,
give me the big blue Hogan cage. Give me that one.
Oh, I love that. Yes, that was my personal favorite. Yes, love
because we grew up with it. That's why it is
exactly. Yep.
So you had some thoughts on the Bayley versus Sasha Hell in a Cell championship match?
Yeah, you know, Jimmy. I mean, fantasy booking for me here. Okay. You know, this has been a match in the making for the last couple of years, since
6 years ish.
Well, yeah. If you really want to go back to the NXT days. Yes,
I do.
Okay, fine. No problem. We can do that. So I'll get to that in a minute here. But, you know, I think this needs to be the main event, and I still think it could be the main event at WrestleMania. But this match, if it's going to be the main event at WrestleMania, which I want it to be, however, if you're gonna get The Rock, it's probably not gonna happen. These two, this has to be the last match for a while. And the reason I say that, Bayley will win at Hell in a Cell. You go back to NXT Brooklyn in 2015 when Bayley won the match against Sasha, and then they had the reunion there. They fought a month later at October 7th, 2015, the Iron Woman match, 30-minute Iron Woman match there. Bayley won 3, falls to 2. She's got the number on Sasha Banks here. Those matches there, plus she turned on Sasha, so she can clearly say that she is, you know, the boss of Sasha Banks right here. Fantasy booking for me, Bayley puts Sasha away here and puts in a stipulation that she cannot challenge her for her SmackDown women's title. The only hope of Sasha to get a shot at the title would be to win the Royal Rumble match. And I think that's going to be kind of like what we saw deja vu with Becky Lynch a couple of years ago, you know, getting that rise to everyone back in the hole behind her back there, and the real heat on Ronda and Charlotte and so forth, even Kofi Kingston, his story of getting the shot at the championship, and Sasha will have to get back to the top there, and she will have that WrestleMania moment beating Bayley. But this is going to be the last one until March, in my opinion.
So I think Sasha wins, and I think Sasha wins because Bayley has had it for 500 days-ish.
Yep.
And I think that they need Sasha Banks to go on a run, and especially on Fox TV. They're investing so much money into Sasha Banks that they finally need to give her her championship run, and they do it on network TV. And it's funny that you say that Bayley's had Sasha's number and you cite those two matches, because that's my reasoning for thinking that Sasha is finally going to go over.
Interesting.
Is that Bayley has beaten her in two of their highest profile matches.
Right.
And now it's Sasha's turn.
Well, that's only
to do it in Hell in a Cell, because I still can't see them having Sasha be 0-3 in Hell in a Cell.
Well, yeah, but I think that's the only time they've ever fought. That's it.
The 0-3 in Hell in a Cell is loses to Charlotte,
loses to
Becky, and then would lose to Bayley. But I don't think that's going to happen, because I can't see that. But Sasha and Bayley have had matches before the NXT TakeOver and the rematch, the 30-minute match.
Right.
And the match in Brooklyn, ironically, was the semi-main event, although it could have been the main event, but Balor and Owens were just, that's one of the lesser talked about ladder matches in the company's history. And Kevin Owens is like king of the ladder match. He's great.
Well, to your point there with Fox investing on Sasha, and that's a fact, they have. But you could also play devil's advocate here and say, all right, well, you know what? We keep the title on Bayley, to what I was saying, and have that chase of Sasha right there to give that audience, that new Friday night audience, more about Sasha Banks. Because from what they saw in her traditionally, return full time on the SmackDown earlier this year, when there was a crowd, she was kind of not a real baby face, I guess you could say, up until the actual return, right? So I think you have that possibility to keep that up here. And now with her getting a title shot at Bayley, her being Sasha, title shot at Bayley at WrestleMania with the crowd, that's why I think it makes more sense for Bayley to retain here.
So I think that they've just realized, because there was that WrestleVotes Twitter account said that they're not doing live touring events until 2022.
Yeah, what the hell was that about?
I don't know how accurate that is, but that might be they are at least planning that, as far as for their business, their business side of things, that they're planning it.
I'm like, does this guy have the insight on the pandemic or something? Come on.
No, he's been right about a lot of stuff. But it wouldn't shock me if that's a real business plan. That's a realistic business expectation is factored in. But they can change that, because if they're going to do WrestleMania in Tampa, which we all think that they are,
right?
That'll be, if the place holds 80,000, they'll put 20,000 in. Right. Because that's what they have to do, unless we're in a vastly different place come March.
Right.
But they kind of have to plan around that touring thing. So now, because TV is what you have.
Yep.
You have to just play to that audience. That's why Roman came back in this totally different manner. That's why they finally pulled the trigger on Sasha and Bayley, and I can tell you this because I know it to be fact.
Yeah.
In March, Sasha Banks was told that she was going to be a babyface and she was winning in Boston at SummerSlam over Bayley.
Oh yeah. I remember us talking about that. Yes.
So.
Yep.
I think that this is the payoff of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they're going to do it in Hell in a Cell, and this would have been the blow-off match of them. But because of the pandemic, because of a few other things, they stalled. And now that they have the TV show, they have the Thunderdome thing.
Yeah.
Now that they're going to do the Hell in a Cell, and I don't know if there's going to be rematches after, but it's a big reason why I think Sasha Banks is going over. and winning the SmackDown Women's Championship.
She's probably the favorite to win right now, but again, you just...
But those odds really don't mean anything until 6 o'clock the day of the show. Right. And I say that because... So here's another thing. I don't know if I said this, but the day of Hell in a Cell in 2016 in Boston.
Yep.
It was... What match is going on last? Is it Sasha and Charlotte, or is it Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins?
Right.
Is Sasha winning? Is Charlotte winning? And that went back and forth up until about 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock that day.
Right.
And that's kind of how sometimes it works in that company. And that's why you can't do the odds thing until, and we know because We also know that finishes can get changed in the middle of the ring.
Exactly. Call the audible right there.
Right? Yep. Like, and the story, and I just talked about this recently with somebody, the WrestleMania 34 finish with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar.
Right.
The story, we were at the WrestleMania party in New Orleans after.
Exactly.
And the buzz in that room full of wrestler and WWE front office personnel, I know I'm breaking kayfabe by talking about it, but The conversation was Vince changed the finish in the middle of the match to Brock retaining.
Right, because Roman was supposed to win that match. Exactly.
We all think Roman was supposed to win that match.
Right.
And we presumably, because that was supposed to be Roman's crowning moment, is that he finally beats Brock Lesnar.
Right.
And then whatever happened, Vince changed his mind, and he changed his mind in the middle of the match.
Which is crazy.
Brock threw the belt at Vince, as we saw in the documentary. Mm-hmm. And because Brock Lesnar knows how to work, and Brock Lesnar knows how to do this, that, and the other thing. And
yeah.
You know, so like it's so those odds, they don't mean as much as they should because.
Right. Well, I'm just saying going into it though, I'm guessing I should say a lot of
it's
people
a work, are probably, bro.
Yeah. A lot of people are expecting Sasha to win this. Yes. But I don't know. It's I'm going Bayley, you know, you can go either way, but it's going to be very interesting to see how this goes. And, I think that should be the main event at Hell in a Cell.
And shout out to Bayley for being the number one ranked female in Pro Wrestling Illustrated's top 100. I had a few notes about that, but I'm going to skip on to the AEW stuff because I want to get that stuff in. Because AEW had their 1 year anniversary show on TNT. And I really thought that this was a good quality show. But here's what I thought the best part of the show was. It wasn't the wrestling. It was the Britt Baker, Tony Schiavone spa bit. They're in a spa. They're getting facial care masks. They're doing the 40-year-old virgin chest waxing bit.
Yep.
And Britt Baker's running down Tony Schiavone for being a broadcaster who wasn't there for one of her big moments. And Tony wasn't there because he was selling a super kick from the Young Bucks. So it was really well done. But Mike Riley, most importantly, my question to you is I want to get your reaction to the 1 year anniversary is, have you been to a spa for a manicure pedicure before?
No, I have not. No, but I do know other men that have. Have you?
I've had two in my life and they're both awesome. And I want to get another one soon.
Really? Pedicure.
Yep, love it. Both.
Pedicure. You got a manicure too?
Yeah.
Really? Interesting. Okay.
Clean my feet, clean my hands. I'm in. Give me the clear covering if you have to give me, but the way that you feel after you've been pampered
and
your hands feel clean. And I went like 6 months without biting my nails after this and my feet were super clean and they were super soft and comfortable. Yeah. Oh, I can't recommend enough. If you're a male and you haven't done a manicure pedicure, do it.
Okay. Oh, that's good advice. Thank you. You've steered me in the right direction for the most part on things, so I appreciate that. I will do that.
So I highly recommend it.
Excellent. Schiavone, though, he's he's whole
awesome. I love Tony Schiavone, the voice of my childhood. I can't say enough good things about Tony Schiavone.
Yeah, he's a good, nice guy too, you know, and just the you know, with Britt Baker, the whole storyline there of, you know, her just attacking him and everything and having fun with him. It's been good for television and a good little angle right there. And he plays it really well. So that was your favorite part of the show, huh?
Yeah, that was my favorite part of the show. And there was a lot of good wrestling on the show.
Yeah.
Orange Cassidy versus Cody was really good.
I love that.
I like that AEW used a time limit draw to not have Cassidy beat Cody, but not have Cody beat Orange Cassidy.
Right.
And it gave the illusion that if Orange Cassidy gets another match with Cody, he can beat him, because the bell rang as Paul Turner's hand was coming down for two, but they made it sound like it was three, but you know, they were off by a second, which I'm not going to crucify them for, because that happens. But the point is that Orange Cassidy had Cody beat for the TNT title, it looked like, but the time limit got him. And that's a classic 80s wrestling thing. And I loved it. I thought it was tremendous.
Yeah. And you know what? We're now 3 weeks away from the next AEW pay-per-view. It's coming up, you know, depending when you listen to it, it's that first weekend of November. But, you know, Cody right here, it was mentioned numerous times during that match with Orange Cassidy right there about Arn Anderson's dissatisfaction with a lot of Cody's tactics there during the match. And then, of course, in weeks leading up to his loss to Brody Lee. So, again, you know, as discussed numerous times here on this particular podcast about the turn of Arn Anderson on Cody or whatnot, I think it's inevitable that a very strong possibility it'll happen at the pay-per-view in 3 weeks there between the two. And, you know, you could very easily have Cody steer in a different direction to go heel, which I think that's the best move for him as a character. But, you know, it just seems like that the Arn Anderson Cody alliance is coming to an end sooner than later.
I don't think it is.
Really?
I think Cody loves to have the circus atmosphere around him and have a lot of tools inside his toolbox.
Yeah.
Because if you look at a lot of his higher profile matches, there's more going on than just what's in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
So Sean Spears had Tully Blanchard and MJF running around on the outside of the ring.
Yep.
Cody loses the world title match because MJF turns on him by throwing in the towel.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two of the more higher profile things that come off the top of my head. And so I think that Cody likes having the idea that he can be creative.
Yep.
And that's out of the Dusty Rhodes playbook. That's out of the Pat Patterson playbook. You have finishes and you have enough elements around a match and around a character that you can have more depth to it. You have more options for that depth.
Okay.
So I'm all for a Cody villain turn.
Yeah.
I think Cody is kind of walking this fine line of still wanting to be cheered by the fans and be loved by the fans so he can sell merchandise, but still have that little pompous attitude like he's better than everybody else. And I know that's MJF's tagline, but it leaves that door open for Cody. And I still think that the play for Cody is to violate the agreement that he can't challenge for the world title, go against that, and then challenge whoever is the world champion, because we have John Moxley on record as saying he doesn't care about that stipulation. But I think that that's probably a longer play for Cody than it is in the immediate future.
Yeah.
This Orange Cassidy Cody stuff and the open challenge stuff is always good.
Yep.
And I think Cody in his run in AEW has generally speaking had the most interest in whatever he was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's fair. No, I don't know. I just think, you know, they've teased it so much and it just seems like it's only a matter of time with the Arn Anderson turn. And yeah, I get what you're saying there, but overall, if he is to be a heel, he could still hold on to that TNT championship and brag mm-hmm. about that, you know, and just say, hey, I'm the first ever TNT champion, you know, hold that to his advantage right there as well. There's another thing on this show I just want to talk about real quick. Sure. Matt Hardy, cleared to return. That's some good news right there.
Yeah, that's great news.
Awesome. You know, we haven't seen him since the pay-per-view Labor Day weekend. But I do like the tie-in here with Sammy Guevara. And, you know, Hardy has complimented him. Excuse me. At least from what I'm reading up on here, either he said it or other people have said that Guevara kind of looks like Jeff Hardy 20 years ago.
I think this Sammy Guevara comparison was Eddie Guerrero.
Was that what it was?
Was a young Eddie Guerrero. I don't know if this is the specific quote that you're referring to, but I know that that's kind of a thing around wrestling because of background heritage, because of athletic style, because of facial expressions, because Sammy Guevara potentially has the whole package.
Oh, yeah.
And Eddie Guerrero had the whole package. Eddie Guerrero could do anything and do it well, could take a bad idea and make it great.
Right.
So, you know, Sammy, we'll see if he can actually do that.
Right.
But I think the Eddie Guerrero comparison is more closer. But if you're telling me Matt Hardy sees Jeff Hardy in Sammy Guevara, I'll buy that. I trust his evaluation of talent.
And I think he's one of the perfect guys to help, you know, put Guevara into that next step right there. A well-seasoned vet like a Matt Hardy. And if it's not going to be him, if it won't be him, then my other choice would be like a Jericho. Look what he's done with Orange Cassidy. Throw Cody in there. You know, look what he's done with MJF. So those three guys right there. But Matt Hardy's a perfect guy right there. Obviously feels comfortable with him, especially in a situation where he's coming back from a very a serious potential career-ending injury right there at the pay-per-view back in September. I liked the show. I thought it was good. And I thought Jericho, the MJF feud, that was funny. I'm looking forward to the Steakhouse. That's going to be funny stuff.
Yeah, I think Jericho and MJF are going to fight at the next pay-per-view, unless they hold it off until February. I feel like that they are long playing a few different things until February.
Mm-hmm.
They're still going to give you a good pay-per-view that I'm not going to order. I'm not going to watch.
Yeah, you're going on the stream. I got it.
They're not getting my money this time. Sorry. Because they're just going to blame the humidity for a bad show.
Like, oh, that was awful. That was awful.
So, well, but I think that the long play for February is Moxley versus Omega.
It was not on the show, by the way. He was not on the show, Omega.
That's okay, because they're starting the world title, the chase for the world title tournament this week, which I think is going to end with Kenny Omega versus Hangman Page.
Okay.
And Omega's going to win that. And then he's going to get his match with Moxley. I hope that they save that for the February pay-per-view. But if they do it like before Christmas, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I think the goal is here's the title, Kenny Omega. Let's go.
Yeah.
And it's revenge for Mox beating him in that unsanctioned match. And this is the Kenny Omega. And they're going to do the tag titles with the Young Bucks. And here we go. Here's the Elite. What do you got?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I will say this though too. I know you're not going to like this, but I thought the FTR match was fantastic against Best Friends. But I will say this though, Jimmy.
That's because Best Friends carried them.
Well, hold on. They did do majority of the work there. But the other thing though, I just want to tell you this. No. But I do want to say this though. I'm having an issue with Tully continuing to work in the FTR's favor over and over. I think it's making FTR look weak, and that's got to end. That's got to end because it's killing their credibility. If they can't win on their own, then I might be out on FTR, Jimmy. So
they're heels.
I know.
Tully Blanchard is a tremendous manager.
Yeah, but Tully
Blanchard is so good that he made Sean Spears somewhat interesting. But he at least made the match with Cody interesting because he's an active manager. He's a tremendous manager. He is helping. So where FTR lack in promo skills and being more than just wrestlers, we're wrestlers. We're holds. We're fists and not this. And we don't do flips. And
great tag team. Great tag
team. If we were in the golden era of tag team wrestling, they would be the Conquistadors. Okay.
Yeah, they would be
they would be enhancement talents. They would be there to make everybody else look better. That's what FTR is. But they're the brain busters. They couldn't hold Tully and Arn's jaw.
No, but in the year 2020 though, now this is to what I was saying last week here when we were talking about the future of AEW, one thing I'd like to see changed about the legends and so forth. Like to your point of Tully being there to carry them. And then Arn Anderson with Cody, that's one of AEW's problems. Well, I mean, that's a potential storyline there on its own, Arn and Cody. But that's an issue that they have right there for FTR. And FTR is going to break out of their shell to be able to do it on their own without Tully Blanchard. Right?
I cracked myself up because what I was about to say. The Young Bucks, when they beat FTR, it will be like Rob Van Dam beating Jerry Lynn. That's what it'll be.
Boy, you're like right.
FTR is just there to make the Young Bucks look good when they win the titles. That's all that they are there for.
Yeah. No. Young Bucks have been kind of quiet as of late.
They're super kicking people. They're turning the volume up on their nasty side. That's what they're doing. They're going all in because when they get in there with FTR or whoever the tag champs are when they get their title shot,
the momentum. Like
it is all in. It is all in. They are nasty. They are going to cheat to win. It is going to be reminiscent, and they're different styles, but work with me with the analogy.
Yeah.
Is when the Road Warriors were challenging the Midnight Express in 88 and they won the tag team titles, I think it was in New Orleans. The Road Warriors came in as FU, we're now heels, we're taking the titles. And the Midnight Express, they bloodied up Bobby Eaton, they beat up Stan Lane, and they took the titles. And I think that's what is going to happen with the Young Bucks, is they're going to go into that tag team title match, whether it's FTR or somebody else, and they are just going to take the titles and flip middle fingers to everybody.
I mean, they're well overdue. We have not seen them have the titles yet, and they put over other guys, let other guys have the spotlight. So it's only a matter of time on that scenario as well that they get the championships around their waist.
Do you have any other thoughts on AEW?
Nothing else in AEW, but I do have one other thought in pro wrestling after.
Sure,
but
go ahead.
I just want to say, I just find it. I was looking at my history timeline this weekend, Jimmy. You know, the Vince McMahon saying, "You're fired." Everyone knows that. "You're fired." Yeah. That was 22 years ago this weekend, the first time he said that at Judgment Day. And I just think I had to go back and watch the match. It was the Stone Cold versus The Undertaker and Kane. Kane and The Undertaker simultaneously pinned Stone Cold to win the championship. And, of course, that was such a great year, 1998. In pro wrestling, and that whole couple of years there, the Attitude Era, when it really was at the peak of it. But that was the beginning to I think personally, you talk about the Survivor Series to begin the show here. I think that may have been one of the best one night pay-per-views. I mean, obviously all pay-per-views are one night for the most part, but the way they had it all built up in a tournament, the Deadly Games, that set up that tournament right there. I'm not a big tournament guy, but that set it off right there with Vince McMahon. You were fired to Austin. Title was vacant, and that set up the tournament right there in 1998, 22 years ago this weekend. So, little history lesson for you guys.
Was that Judgment Day?
Yeah, Judgment Day.
Okay, so it wasn't a three-way match. Judgment Day was, it was Kane versus The Undertaker for the WWF Championship, and Steve Austin was the special guest referee.
Steve
Austin didn't crown a new champion, he didn't raise the hand of Kane or Undertaker, then he would be fired.
There you go.
And Steve Austin stunned both Kane and Undertaker and counted them both out for three. Flipped birds, and then Austin fired him, which led to the next night on Raw and the Bang 316 thing.
Right.
So it was a no contest between Kane and Undertaker. Steve Austin was the guest referee.
And to
a point on that, and it's something that we don't see a lot, and it's different time frames, and you're allowed to do different stuff more so.
Yeah.
Like, one of the great things that made Vince McMahon arguably the greatest villain character in history is he would show his ass. So one night, he fires Steve Austin. The next night, Steve Austin kidnaps him in camouflage, wheels him to the middle of the ring, and he urinates in his pants. He craps his pants, whatever it was, and it's clear as day. He's got a water pistol in his pocket, and he just lets it rip when the Bang 316 is about to come out.
Yeah.
But the point is that Vince McMahon showed his ass when he needed to, and that's something that we need more of. Instead of, like, Stephanie McMahon, who's a tremendous villain, she does it at WrestleMania. She loses to Ronda Rousey. She lets Roman Reigns spear it at WrestleMania in Dallas. She lets Seth Rollins put her through a table at WrestleMania in Orlando. There needed to be more of that to have the good guys look like good guys, and they're triumphant, and they're smart, and they're outsmarting things. And that, I think, is a key element to any good guy character, And it was really a key to Steve Austin's success.
And for this particular line where people are still talking about it today, wrestling fan or not, knowing what Vince McMahon said, you're fired. They know that. That was the advent of it this weekend, 22 years ago. There you go.
Just my closing thought before we wrap up is I do want to mention that Kota Ibushi won the G1 Climax tournament for the second year in a row. And he now has a briefcase, which allows him to challenge for the IWGP championship at Wrestle Kingdom 15, which is going to be a two-night event, January 4th and 5th of 2021. He could lose it to Jay White on the way. He could lose it to somebody else. But I just kind of want to say it's awesome that Ibushi won the tournament again. And I think whoever the champion is, I think Kota Ibushi is going to win it. I think he's going to win the IWGP championship. And I think you're going to see a situation where in 2021, Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega, who were known as a tag team called the Golden Lovers in New Japan, are both going to be world champions at the same time.
Hot take there. Interesting. Ibushi wins January and Omega February?
Wins February. Yep.
Yeah, makes sense.
And I think it's going to be a cool thing because there was a story at the time that AEW was launching that, well, why doesn't Kenny Omega bring Kota Ibushi to the States?
Yep.
And the answer is because Kenny Omega knows how important it is for Kota Ibushi to be the IWGP champion at one time.
Yep. Yep.
And so hopefully this happens this time. So okay. That's my closing thought for this week.
Hey, Jimmy, one more thing, too, real quick. Sure. Just for those of you, if you have a chance, listen to a little bonus thing. Jimmy had an opportunity to interview our good friend of ours and his, too, Justin Barrasso, Sports Illustrated. It's in the archives. I'm looking forward to listening to it. Justin's a very talented writer, a local Boston guy. Known him for a few years. Great kid, too. So good pro wrestling talk there. Check it out this week.
Yeah, Justin and I, it posted this morning, posted about midnight this morning. Cause we,
how was your Saturday night?
It was great. I got to talk wrestling with Justin.
That's good.
It was
though.
Awesome.
That's awesome. I love it.
It was great. Good. We talked for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Just about his background, about our friendship. Cause Justin and I have known each other 18, 19 years. There's some good stories in there. There's some good stories of stuff that Justin and I, have been a part of together. There's some good wrestling conversation in there. If you don't want to listen to all 2 hours, check the timestamps on things and you can kind of jump around if you don't want to listen to all 2 hours. Cause quite frankly, like I don't want to talk for 2 hours. I don't want to listen to myself talk for 2 hours because I'm just a fan. I've been fortunate to work in the media and make some friends. So I have a little bit of information and can add a little bit of insight, but I'm just a fan.
Just give and Justin so, the softballs.
Like, if you're telling me that Jim Ross or Bruce Pritchard or Eric Bischoff or Arn Anderson or Tony Schiavone are talking for 2 hours or 3 hours, yep, I'll listen to that.
You're invested.
Hack radio producer who pushes buttons 5 days a week who is a wrestling fan, I don't know that I'd listen to it for 2 hours, but God bless you if you want to.
Hey, well, I'm looking forward to tuning in at some point this week. So,
and Justin, by the way, is worth your time. He writes pretty much every other day for Sports Illustrated. For me, like, he's a real pure wrestling journalist.
Yep.
And he's got access and he gets comments on the record from people. He's one of the most informed pro wrestling writers out there. Agreed. So Justin Barrasso, Sports Illustrated, you should follow him on social. You should follow his work on Sports Illustrated. Like I said, I did 2 hours with him. If you don't want to listen to the whole thing, I don't blame it. It's 2 hours. Or listen on double speed and then it's only an hour. that's available in the archives of the podcast.
Check it out.
Each week you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Next week, our show will be post Hell in a Cell, which I assume will have more than 3 matches, but we'll see. So we will talk to you after Hell in a Cell next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.